The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. If you have any questions or would like to become a sponsor, please contact our office at 919-832-5138. Okay, let's go into health and medicine in a Reader's Digest. The lifesaver on Dad's computer screen. A daughter caring for her aging father finds help and peace of mind from a virtual companion named Pony. Arlen Anderson grasped her father's hand. A nursing home would be safer, Dad, she told him. No way, Jim Anderson interjected. At 91, he wanted to remain in a woodsy Minnesota cottage he and his wife had built on the shores of Lake Minnetonka, where she had died in his arms just a year before. Arlen had moved from California back to Minnesota 2 decades early to be near her parents. Now in 2013, she was 50-something and finding that her father's decline was all-consuming. Her father, an inventor, pilot, sailor, and general Mr. Fix-It, started experiencing bouts of paranoia, a sign of Alzheimer's, in his mid-80s. Arlen's house was a 40-minute drive from the cottage, and she had been relying on a patchwork of technology to keep tabs on her dad. She set an open laptop on the counter so she could chat with him on Skype. She installed a camera in the kitchen and another in his bedroom so she could check whether he had fallen. When she read about a new elder care service called Care.Coach, a few weeks after broaching the subject of a nursing home, it piqued her interest. For about $200 a month, a computerized avatar, controlled remotely by a human caregiver, would watch over a homebound person 24 hours a day. Arlen paid that much just for 9 hours of in-home help. She signed up immediately. A Google tablet arrived a week later. Following the instructions, Arlen uploaded dozens of pictures to the service's online portal, including images of family members and Jim's boat. Then she and her sister, Lainey Anderson, presented the tablet to him. Here, Dad, we got you this. An animated German Shepherd appeared and started to talk in the same female voice you hear when using Google Maps or other Google apps. Before Alzheimer's had taken his hold, Jim would have wanted to know exactly how the service worked. Now he simply chatted back. Within a week, Jim and his dog, who he had named Pony, had settled into a routine. Every 15 minutes or so, Pony would ask for Jim, would look for Jim, calling his name if he was out of view. Sometimes Jim would pet the sleeping dog on screen to rustle her awake. His touch and an alert took the care coach worker behind the avatar, who would launch the tablet's audio and video stream. Pony reminded Jim which caretaker would be visiting him to do the task that a virtual dog couldn't, preparing meals, changing sheets, driving him to a senior center. Pony would read poetry aloud or discuss the news. Sometimes she'd hold up a photo of Jim's daughters or his inventions between her paws, prompting him to talk about his past. The dog complimented Jim's sweater. He reciprocated by petting the screen with his finger, sending hearts floating up from the dog's head. I love you, Jim, Pony told him. Jim turned to Arlen and gloated. She thinks I'm really good. About 1,500 miles south of Lenaplaca in Monterrey, Mexico, Rodrigo Rochin opens his laptop and logs into CareCoach dashboard to make his rounds. He takes baseball with a New Jersey man and chats with a woman in North Carolina who places a cookie in front of her tablet for him to eat, and he greets Jim, one of his regulars. Rochin is 35 years old, a fan of the Spurs and the Cowboys, and a bit of an introvert, happy to retreat into his home office each morning. He grew up crossing the border to attend school in McAllen, Texas, honing the English that he uses to chat with elderly people in the United States. Rochin was hired in December 2012 as one of CARES Coach's earliest contractors, role-playing 36 hours a week as one of the service's avatars. In person, Rochin is a soft-spoken, with wire spectacles and a beard. He lives with wife and 2 basset hounds. But the people on the other side of the screen don't know that. They don't know his name, or in the case of those who have dementia, such as Jim, that he even exists. It's his job to be invisible. Rochin is one of a dozen care coach employees in Latin America and the Philippines. Like all the company's workers, Rochin keeps meticulous notes on the people he watches over so he can coordinate their care with family members and other workers. Arlen started checking Pony's log and watching her dad interact with Pony. Any reservations Arlen had about outsourcing her father's companionship vanished. Pony eased her anxiety about leaving Jim alone, and the virtual dog's small talk lightened the mood. Victor Wang, CareCoach's CEO, was studying human-machine interaction at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology when his grandmother in Taiwan was diagnosed with Lewy body dementia, a disease that affects memory and movements. On Skype calls, Wang watched her grow increasingly debilitated. After one such call, a thought struck him. Could he tap remote labor to comfort her and others like her? In 2012, he launched CareCoach with a fellow MIT student. The company's tablets are now used by hospitals and health plans across the country. In a study conducted by Pace University, CareCoach's avatars were found to reduce subjects' loneliness, delirium, and falls. A health provider in Massachusetts was able to replace a man's 11 weekly in-home nurse visits with a CareCoach tablet. The man said the pet's nagging was like having his wife back in the house, in a good way. Some critics, such as Sherry Turkle, Ph.D., a professor of social studies, science, and technology at MIT, view robotized elder care as a cop-out. This kind of app is making us forget what we really know about what makes older people feel sustained, she says, caring interpersonal relationships. For many families, though, providing long-term in-person care is simply unsustainable. Between 2000 and 2030, the population of those older than 80 is projected to rise 79%, but the number of family caregivers available is expected to increase just 1%. Among elder care experts, there's a resignation that the demographics of an aging America will make technological solutions unavoidable. Joseph Copland, Ph.D., director of the MIT's Age Lab, is pragmatic. I would always prefer the human's touch over a robot, he says, but there's no human available. I would take the high-tech in lieu of high touch. And there's a picture here of the dog. It's not actually a real dog. It's a cartoon dog. In front of Jim's thing. CareCoach is an amalgam of both. The service conveys the perceptiveness and emotional intelligence of the humans powering it, but masquerades as an animated app. One concern is how cognizant seniors are of being watched over by strangers. By default, the app explains to patients that someone is surveilling them when it's first introduced. But if a person is incapable of consenting to CareCoach's monitoring, then someone must do so in his or her behalf. Arlen didn't worry about deceiving her dad. Telling Jim about the human on the other side of the screen would have blown the whole charm of it, she says. Even CareCoach users who are completely aware of the person on the other end of the dashboard tend to experience the avatar as something between human, pet, and machine. When Arlen first signed up for the service, she hadn't anticipated that she would end up loving, yes, loving, she says, the avatar as well. She taught Pony to say, yeah, sure, you betcha, and don't ya know, like a Minnesotan, which made her laugh even more than did her dad. When Arnie collapsed into the couch after a long day of caretaking, Pony piped up, Arnie, how are you? Arnie is the family's nickname for Arlen. Alone, Arlen petted the screen. The way Pony nuzzled her finger was weirdly therapeutic, and told the pet how hard it was to watch her dad lose his identity. I'm here for you, Pony said. I love you, Arnie. As his time went on, the father, daughter, and family pet grew close. In the summer, Arlen carried the tablet to the picnic table on the patio so they could eat lunch overlooking the lake. When Arlen took her dad sailing, Jim brought Pony along. I saw mostly sky, Roshan recalls. One day, Pony held up a photo of Jim's wife, Dorothy Anderson, between her paws. It had been more than a year since his wife's death, and Jim hardly mentioned her anymore. That day, though, he gazed at the photo fondly. I still love her, he declared. Arlen rubbed his shoulder, clasping her hand over her mouth to stifle her crying. I'm getting emotional, too, Pony said. Then Jim leaned toward the picture of his deceased wife and petted her face with his finger, the same way he would awaken a sleeping pony. In early March 2014, Jim fell on his way to the bathroom. He was checked into a hospital, then into the nursing home he'd so wanted to avoid. The Wi-Fi there was spotty, which made it difficult for Jim and Pony to connect. That July, in an email from Wang, Roshan learned that Jim had died in his sleep. Sitting before his laptop, Roshan bowed his head and recited a sonnet Lord's Prayer for Jim. Even now, when a senior will do something that reminds him of Jim, Roshan feels a pang. I still care about them, he says. In July 29, 2014, Arlen carried Pony to Jim's funeral, placing the tablet facing forward on the pew beside her. She invited any workers behind Pony who wanted to attend to log in. A year later, Arlen finally deleted the care coach service from the tablet. It felt like a kind of second burial. She still sighs. Pony, when the voice of her old friend gives her directions as she drives around Minneapolis, reincarnated in Google Maps. After saying his prayer for Jim, Roshan logged into the care coach dashboard to make his rounds. He ducked into living rooms, kitchens, and hospital rooms around the United States, seeing if all was well, seeing if anyone needed to talk. All in a day's work. I'm a nurse in a hospital's children ward. One night I was at the nurse's station when I heard a little boy in his room talking. He kept the patter up for some time. Finally, I got on the intercom and said softly but firmly, "All right, Johnny, it's time to go to sleep now." There was quiet in the room. Then he said, "Okay, God, I will." I didn't hear a peep from him until morning. We asked a prospective job applicant at our company to fill out a questionnaire. For the line, choose one word to summarize your strongest professional attribute. One woman wrote, "I'm good at following instructions." I was in a small store in a nearby town one evening, wanting to find out where it opened the next morning. I stopped a teenage staffer on a way out and asked, "What are your hours?" She replied, "Right now, 6 to 9, because I'm in school, but next month it will be full-time." The process of interviewing for a new job is an important step. Don't screw it up like these job candidates did. Interviewer, "What's your greatest weakness?" Candidate, "Women, that's kind of why I'm looking for a new job. I had an affair with my boss's wife." Interviewing, "Did you bring your references with you?" Candidate, "I tried. They couldn't get the time off work." Interviewer, "What makes you think you're right for the job working at a fast food restaurant?" Candidate, "I'm great with animals." Interviewer, "Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Candidate, "Probably some sort of exotic beach somewhere." Everyone hates millennials until it's time to convert a PDF into a Word document. You own every bullet. In the midst of a tense ambush in Iraq, a soldier recalls his father's valuable lesson. "I remember the first time I ever pointed a weapon at someone with the intent to kill them. The experience was very different from how I'd imagined it would be. Form are ambiguous, confusing, and subjective. The training scenarios and exercise had never really covered situations like the one I found myself in. I hadn't been in Iraq that long, maybe 60 days. My assignment, gunner for a troop transport vehicle known as an MRAP. There were 30 or so troops in the platoon, and our mission this evening was a reconnaissance patrol taken to the edge of our battle space, the dividing line between the areas of responsibility for military units. That was where the bad guys tended to collect, much in the same manner that the space between tiles in a bathroom collects mold and grime. For this assignment, we were the Mr. Clean. The plan, look around, talk to the locals, try to wrinkle out some academic actionable intelligence, and then start kicking the hornet's nest. Depending on where we were, this was either super successful, quite a few of the locals actually hated the insurgency, or a total bust. The village had only one road in. Just like so many other stories in Iraq, had things happened, bad things happen when you were at the far end of your leash, late at night, on the only egress-ingress route. As we mounted up to head back to camp, I heard some of my butters muttering, "Ugh, we are getting hit tonight." I tried and failed to play it cool. "We're getting hit?" I was excited and nervous. These guys had been here longer than I had and clearly knew what was up, but they seemed strangely unconcerned by it. "Getting hit" was spoken of in the same tone as "it's going to rain" or "we're going to be late." An inconvenience, but not the end of the world. For a green kid on my first deployment, getting hit was a pretty big deal. I hopped into my turret, checked my machine gun, and secured all my other gear and settled in. Turns out the grunts were only half right. About 1 mile out of the village, our lead vehicle slammed to a stop. It missed running over a pressure-detonated IED. Think of a mousetrap wired with 3 artillery shells by mere feet. The platoon sergeant prepared to call for the explosive ordnance disposal unit to come remove the bomb, but the platoon leader cut him off. The leader had had enough. Too many IEDs, too many broken vehicles, too many broken men. He issued a new order. Dismount a squad to be led by the leader to take cover and watch the site. He He then ordered the vehicle pushed back half a mile and hidden in a ditch beside the road with the engines and lights off. We were to wait and see whether anyone came to collect the IED. After we pulled back, my vehicle was positioned in a depression with just a turret peeking out at ground level. We shut everything down and settled in for a long night. After about 3 hours, through our night vision goggles, I saw a pickup truck exiting the village. This wasn't all that usual in itself, but the BIF was traveling across the field, not on the road, with no lights on. Naturally, this twitched my middle antenna. The vehicle was a little over a mile away and heading in our direction. Over the intercom, I let the vehicle commander know that we had company coming. He passed the word to the platoon sergeant, who passed it to the platoon leader, who was on the ground near the IED. At about 1,500 meters, the order was given to me. If they get within 300 meters, engage at your discretion. It was that simple. No warning shots, no flares, no second chances. Waiting for the vehicle to approach the 300-meter mark was the longest 15 minutes of my life. At your discretion wasn't something I heard very often as a 21-year-old specialist. I was giving the power of life and death over the occupants of that truck. They didn't even know it. My brain raced. Are these insurgents? What if they are doing farm work in the middle of the night? Not uncommon in the desert country. What if they are driving off-road to avoid the insurgents and IEDs they fear may be on the road? What if it's some guys taking a family member to the hospital? What if they are insurgents and the truck explodes when I shoot it? Hopefully 300 meters is far enough away. But what played through my mind over and over was a lesson my father had taught me 10 years before. When you pull the trigger, the consequences are yours forever. When I was a boy in Sandwich, Massachusetts, I became interested in firearms and hunting, and asked my father to take me shooting. After some haggling with Mom, he agreed. I remember sitting down at the dining room table prior to heading to the range. He had removed some rifles from the safe in the basement and instructed me on their proper handling. After I gained his confidence, he fixed me with his loving, firm gaze and said, "I'm going to tell you something very simple but very important. You can't take a bullet back once you pull the trigger." I smiled and said, "Yeah, Dad, I know." He didn't even blink. "No, you don't. I mean this. You can't take a bullet back. Once you pull the trigger, it's forever. It's not a movie. It's not a video game. No matter how many times you say, 'I'm sorry, it was an accident, I didn't mean to that bullet never, ever comes back. Do you understand?" He reached out and squeezed my shoulder. "I'm not trying to scare you, but rifles are for men, not boys. If you take this and we go shooting, you need to accept responsibility every time you pull the trigger. Every bullet, forever." I nodded my head. I remember tearing up because the enormity of what he'd said had finally gotten through. I'd have the power of life and death over other people. It's an awesome and terrifying responsibility. And the person I loved and wanted to impress most in the world had entrusted me with this responsibility. That night in Iraq, I performed mundane little tasks as the last 5 minutes of the lives of those strangers in the truck ticked down. Checking the safety, straightening ammo belts so the rounds would feed correctly and not jam, securing my earplugs, spitting out my gum. Over the radio, I checked my clearance to fire. The balloon leader broke in with a yelling whisper, "Check fire, repeat, check fire, do not shoot." It was weird, I thought. I popped back up to check the truck, still coming. Suddenly, a loud burst of machine gun fire erupted from the squad situated near the IED. Tracers arced across the night from the ambush site, past the truck, low, fast, and deadly. A few scattered rifle shots barked out, then silence. The truck cut a sharp turn back to town and roared off. Our MRAP raced to where the ambush had occurred, spotlights piercing the darkness, guns up and out. Two men, dumped from the truck, lay on the ground, one twitching and bleeding. The platoon medic kept them alive until a medevac helicopter arrived and ferried them to a hospital. Though I never learned who they were or what they were doing, I was 90% sure that night, as I am now, that they were coming out to pick up the ID or use it later. The other 10% of me sometimes wonders. If I had shot, regardless of who in the vehicle, under the rules of engagement, I would have been cleared legally. Ethically, I believe I would have been cleared, too. Given the circumstances, morally, I'm not so sure. Morally, I believe we answer to a higher power that rules of engagement or even the letter of the law. Morally, I believe someday I'll be called to account for the things I've done or neglected to do. Some days I'm not sure whether I'll be able to do that. What I am sure of today in my early 30s, the same way I was sure of it on that moonless March night when I was 21, and when I was a wide-eyed child at my family dinner table, taking in one of life's most important lessons, is that once you pull the trigger, you own it forever, because the bullet never, never, ever comes back. Inspirational quotes from modern life. A journey of 1,000 miles begin with one stop, with one step costs way too much gas money. If not us, if not now, when maybe after this next episode? The great thing this world is not so much where we started, we stand, as in where we lie down to take a nap. It doesn't matter what you are or what you look like, so long as somebody delivers pizza to you. Education costs money, but then so does boxed wine. I know which one I'd prefer. And a real quick laughter, the best medicine. It's a good thing snakes and dogs don't interbreed. Nobody wants a loyal snake. Knowing that the pastor enjoyed his drink, a hotel owner offered him a case of cherry brandy for Christmas in exchange for a free ad in the church newsletter. The pastor agreed and ran this in the next issue. The pastor would like to thank Patrick Smith for this kind gift of a crate of fruit and for the spirit in which it was given. Whoever coined the phrase, the pitter-patter of little feet, clearly never heard a four-year-old walk. And with that, let's switch over again to Consumer Reports. And the last time we closed out with recalls, and we had a couple more that I didn't get a chance to get to. Anesthetic creams and sprays. Uber Scientific is recalling about 76,000 Uber Numb tropical anesthetic creams and sprays because the packaging is not child-resistant as required by the Poison Prevention Packaging Act. The products contain lidocaine, which poses a risk of poisoning to young children if they put it on their skin or ingest it. The anesthetic was sold online at Amazon.com and UberScientific.com from February 2017 through April 2018 for $20 to $40. What to do? Put the product out of reach of children and call Uber Scientific at 877-289-1368 or go to UberScientific.com to get a free replacement or a full refund. IKEA lamps. IKEA is recalling about 37,000 Calypso ceiling lamps because the glass shade can detach and fall, posing impact and laceration hazards. The lamps were sold at IKEA stores and websites from August 2016 to July 2018 for about $30. What to do? For specific model details, call IKEA at 888-966-4532 or go to ikea-usa.com. If you determine that your lamp is included in a recall, stop using it and return it to any IKEA store for a full refund or a replacement lamp. Product update. The latest ratings from our labs. Must love pasta. In our nutrition labs, we made the delicious discovery that whole wheat pasta can be just as good as regular and that you can get a flavorful, even healthy sauce from a jar. A plate of pasta is not only truly comforting and tasty, but also one of the easiest dinners you can make, especially if you're not making the sauce yourself. In fact, 61% of consumers say they've used ready-made sauce in the past 6 months, and Americans spent about $2.6 billion of them on them in 2017, according to market research from Mintel. If you're one of them and have worried that you're trashing your diet, don't. The jarred sauce shortcut can be a healthy option. Nutritionally, tomato sauce counts toward the recommended 2 to 3 cups of vegetables you should have per day, and more low-sodium, no-sugar-added sauces are on supermarket shelves than there used to be. Many jarred sauces aren't that different from what you would make yourself, says Dana Hans, Ph.D., registered dietitian, senior clinical dietitian at the Ronald Reagan UCLA Medical Center in Los Angeles. Look for ones with simple ingredients, list of things you recognize as tomatoes, olive oil, and herbs. But with dozens of brands and flavors on the market, finding a good one can take a lot of label reading. To help you speed up your shopping, CR's Trimmy Nutritionists and Professional Food Tasters rated 35 tomato-based sauces, most widely sold type for nutrition and taste. Is sauce a superfood? Almost 70% of the sauces in our test received at least a very good score for nutrition. Tomato sauce supplies vitamins A and C, plus lycopene. Tomatoes are one of the few foods high in this antioxidant, which in addition to giving tomatoes their red color, has been linked to a lower risk of cardiovascular disease, prostate cancer, and other diseases. Cooked tomatoes have far more lycopene than raw because the heat during cooking changes the chemical shape of lycopene, making it much more easily absorbed, says Zhang Don Wang. MD, PhD, Director of the Nutrition and Cancer Biology Laboratory at the Jean Mary USDA Human Nutrition Research Center, boy, that's a mouthful, on aging at Tufts University in Boston. And a little fat in your sauce can further enhance lycopene absorption. Most of the sauce we tested had fewer than 5 grams of total fat per serving and no saturated fat. Even among the higher fat sauces, the source of all the fat was almost always olive oil. The monounsaturated fats that make up the majority of fat in olive oil help protect against heart disease and stroke when they're part of a healthful diet, says Amy Keating, registered dietitian, a Consumer Reports nutritionist who led the testing. Sodium and sugar shock. Like many packaged foods, jarred sauces can be packed with sodium, and getting too much in your diet can increase your developing high blood pressure and ultimately cardiovascular disease. In fact, a high sodium intake is the leading dietary component linked to death from cardiovascular disease, responsible for nearly 10% of deaths, according to a 2017 study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Half the sauces we tested were salt bombs, containing 400 milligrams of sodium or more per half cup. You should have less than 2,300 milligrams per day. Three of the sauces, Mazzetta Napa Valley Homemade Tomato and Sweet Basil, Trader Giotto's, Trader Joe's, Traditional Marinara, and Hunt's Traditional, clocked in at more than 500 milligrams of sodium per serving. A manufacturer may hesitate to lower the sodium because they believe that consumers won't accept a lower sodium version, Keating says. But in our test, the two sauces at the top of the ratings were low in sodium. The Silver Palette Low Sodium Marinara with 115 grams of sodium per half cup and Victoria Low Sodium Marinara, 120 milligrams per half cup, scored an excellent for nutrition and a very good for taste. Although some higher sodium sauces got excellent sources for taste, the difference was so slight that it makes sense to choose lower sodium, Keating says, and sprinkle with a little cheese, you probably wouldn't notice any difference in flavor between a lower and a higher sodium sauce of similar overall quality. If you're having trouble adjusting to less salt, Keating suggests stirring a quarter teaspoon into an entire jar of low-sodium sauce. That still keeps the sodium count lower than it is in most of the worst offenders. Or try Rao's homemade sensitive marinara. With 200 milligrams of sodium per serving, it was the lowest sodium sauce among those that rated it excellent for taste. All tomato sauce gets a touch of sweetness from the natural sugars in tomatoes, tomato puree, or tomato paste. Certain products have added sweeteners, though, such as sugar, cane sugar, or high fructose corn syrup. Keeping added sugars to a minimum in your diet is important for weight control and reducing your risk of heart disease and type 2 diabetes, Keating says. Don't worry that you'll be sacrificing flavor if you skip sauces with added sugars. Just 2 of the 18 sauces that received at least a very good taste rating in our test contained sugars, added sugars. Simplicity wins. With the exception of added sugars and sodium, the majority of the tested sauces had clean ingredients lists, meaning few of them contained preservatives or added flavors. Still, those at the top of the ratings were more likely to be made with just a few whole ingredients, such as tomatoes, whole, peeled rather than diced or pureed, olive oil, fresh onion, garlic, and basil. The lower scoring sauces were typically made with potato paste and dehydrated garlic, onions, and spices. However, better quality ingredients will cost you. While 3 of the top 10 scoring sauces lost less than a dollar per serving, in general, the lower-priced sauces fell into the bottom of the ratings, Keating says. But pasta sauce is a staple that regularly goes on sale at the supermarkets, with significant savings. For example, our shoppers paid $9 for a 24-ounce jar of Rao's homemade marinara, but we've seen it on sale for as little as $5. And before we get to the ratings, there's some inserts. Let me read those. Vodka, pesto, Alfredo, and more. Craving something more creamy or complicated than is in a tomato marinara? It will cost you in calories and fat. A typical tomato sauce has fewer than 100 calories per half cup and a healthier nutritional profile than these have. Bertolli's Vodka Sauce. It's tomato-based, but the cream and cheese add sodium and saturated fat. Has 140 calories per half a cup and 10 grams of fat. Barilla Classic Basil Pesto. While most of its fat is unsaturated, it's still high in calories and sodium for such a small serving. A quarter cup is what they recommend for a serving at 200 calories and 19 grams of fat. Rao's Homemade Alfredo Sauce. It looks better than the vodka sauce, but that's only because the serving size is smaller. A quarter cup is 100 calories. The fat is 9 grams. And there's a Zucchina Antica Tuscany Pumpkin Sauce. It has a healthy pumpkin, but also cream and butter, which bump it up in saturated fat. Half a cup only has 90 calories, but has 8 grams of fat. Want some cheese or meatballs with that? Here's how the nutrition profile of a cup of spaghetti and a half cup of our top-rated Palette low-sodium marinara changes depending on which ingredients you add. Spaghetti and sauce is 280 calories. It has 4.5 grams of fat and 6 grams of saturated fat. The carbs are 49 grams and the fiber is 4. There's sugars and protein. Sprinkle with 1 table of Parmesan and the calories jump 20 to 300 calories. Fat goes up a point and a half to 6 grams. Saturated fat actually goes up a gram. Carbs are now 50 grams instead of 49 grams, so not a big deal there. But top with a 2-ounce meatball. Calories jump to 440, fat to 17 grams, and the saturated fat to 4.5 grams. The carbs are now 54. Add 2 ounces of Italian sausage, and the calories jump to 480, the fat to 20 grams, the saturated fat to 5 grams, and the carbs to 52 grams. Of course, if you replace half the pasta with zucchini noodles, the calories are 190, saturated fat is 4 grams, saturated fat is 0 grams, fat is 4 grams, and carbohydrates are only 30 grams, so you get a big drop there. Whole wheat pasta gets a taste makeover. People on low-carb diets may needlessly be taking pasta off the menu. Our bodies need carbohydrates to function, says UCLA's Dana Honeys, Ph.D., R.D. Even though traditional pasta is made from refined flour, it's not devoid of nutrition, and it isn't digested as quickly as other refined carbohydrates, so it's less likely to cause blood sugar spikes. Still, you can make pasta healthy by choosing 100% whole wheat. Whole wheat pasta's calories, fat, and protein content are similar to those of regular, but it packs at least twice as much fiber, a good thing considering that only about 5% of Americans meet their daily fiber needs. Pasta purists argue that the whole wheat variety tastes grainy and bitter. But when our professional tasters sampled 10 whole wheat pastas, sans the sauce, all of them received very good scores for nutrition and 3 products earned very good taste ratings. To ease the translation, start with a 50-50 mix of regular and whole wheat and gradually go whole wheat. And the way it rates is this way. They run a rating. Barilla whole grain penne, the calories are 100. And the total carbs are total fat is 1.5. And let's see, carbs, looking for carbs. Or carbohydrates, the cost per serving is 16 cents. This penny mild whole grain flavor with sweet and nutty sides. Chewy and springy texture, close to regular pasta. De Checo, 100% whole wheat penne rigate, is 190 calories. It goes for 29 cents a serving. Medium, slightly nutty, whole grain flavor, firm and chewy, but a bit crunchy. Ronzoni Healthy Harvest, 100% whole grain penne rigato. And that goes 180 calories, 19 cents a serving. This penne with some sweet and nutty whole grain flavor. A little chewy and springy, similar to regular pasta, with a very slight crumbly texture. And then we have the pasta sauces. Tomato sauces can be healthy for you, and as we found that you don't need a lot of sodium in your sauce for it to be tasty, too. The top rated is a Silver Palette low-sodium marinara, and that got high scores across the board. It sells for about 83 cents a serving. Lightly cooked sauce, big tomato and garlic flavors, with notes of onion and fresh basil and olive oil. The second one is a Vittoria low-sodium marinara. That's also scored very high, and it serves for $1.13 a serving. Organico Bello, organic marinara, is the fourth, and that serves for $1.12 a serving. Victoria Marinara, Victoria White Linen Marinara, Cusco Atico Garlic Marinara, Classic Rivera Marinara, Michael's of Brooklyn, Fresh Tomato and Basil, and Raw's Homemade all scored high as well. Okay, this next section is pretty important. Medical tests you do and don't need. MRIs, EKGs, CT scans. Some health screenings may save your life, but others can be a waste of time and money and pose risk of their own. How to know which tests to get and which ones you can safely skip. Just before her father died of colon cancer, Lynn Milleron, then age 40, made him a solemn promise she would get herself screened for the disease. 2 months later, Milleron had that colonoscopy, and is profoundly grateful she did. The doctor removed a large precancerous polyp, she says. That test probably saved my life. Milleron of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, benefited from an idea that took hold as early as the mid-1940s. In the town of Oxford, Massachusetts, U.S. Public Health Service workers decided to look for signs of diabetes in people. To do that, they tested the urine and blood glucose of almost three-quarters of the town's 4,983 residents. One goal was to show that early detection of diabetes through mass screening could prevent such life-altering complications as heart disease and nerve damage. Within a few years, diabetes screening was being done across the U.S., and similar tests for other diseases quickly followed. Today, as we've learned more about how to detect disease early, there are scores of blood tests, ultrasounds, and CT scans to screen for conditions like cancer and low bone density, and an increasing number are now offered direct to consumers, leaving you to pick and pay for screenings. The surge of interest in testing is propelled by a trend toward people being proactive about taking better care of themselves, says Alex Christ, M.D., a professor of family medicine at Virginia Commonwealth University and vice chairperson of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, an independent expert panel that makes recommendations to the government and the medical organizations about preventive care. Generally, he notes, that's a good thing. Screening tests have been shown to help people live longer or better or an enormous boon to public health. As with Milleron's colonoscopy, a screening test could spare you the physical, emotional, and financial pain of dealing with a serious illness, and maybe even save your life. As just one example, screenings done at the right age and frequency can cut the risk of rectal cancer and death by as much as half, according to the American Cancer Society. That blood pressure check you get during a routine physical, if it reveals hypertension and you get treated, you might reduce your heart attack and stroke risk by more than 20%. The trouble is, too few people are getting the right tests. Overall, Americans get only half the preventive care, including screenings, that they should, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, reports. Many other people are screened too frequently at the wrong age, or with tests that aren't very accurate. We have a problem in this country where we're both underscreened and overscreened, says Susie Dade, MPA, Deputy Director of the nonprofit Washington Health Alliance. For example, evidence-based guidelines from the United States USPTF call for a one-time osteoporosis screening for most women age 65 and older, and no screening for younger women at low risk for the bone-thinning disease. A 2015 study, however, found that almost half of the low-risk women in their 50s had the screening, while 4 of 10 women between ages 65 and 74 and 6 in 10 women 75 and older had not. Medical screenings aren't an exact science, and therein lies the rub. All screenings, though some more than others, may still miss problems. The SAS notes, for example, that mammograms fail to find 1 in 5 breast cancers. Screenings can also pick up harmless abnormalities or produce false positive results, which incorrectly indicate the presence of a disease. That can lead to unnecessary and invasive tests and surgery, which have their own risk. The challenge is making sure that people get the right care, Chris says. There are a lot of tests that seem like they would help you, but aren't backed up by any data and can actually open up a whole set of harms. Ron Braithwaite of Portland, Oregon, knows that all too well. Last spring, at age 66, he had a slightly elevated PSA blood test result. A higher-than-normal PSA can indicate prostate cancer, but most often it signifies a non-cancerous condition such as a prostate infection or an enlarged prostate, which he had lived with for a while. On his urologist's advice, Braithwaite had a outpatient biopsy. A sample of prostate tissue was removed, and he knew there were risks. In one study, 5.6% of men who had a seminal biopsy experienced a complication such as infection, bleeding, or urinary problems. Braithwaite's results were negative for cancer, as they are in 60% of men who have such a biopsy, according to a 2018 analysis. But soon after, Braithwaite says he developed a high fever. He was hospitalized for 6 days for a severe E. coli bloodstream infection, during which the life-threatening illness damaged his kidneys and heart. Braithwaite says his kidneys are functioning again, but he faces a long recovery. His first PSA test was likely his last. The health service does not recommend it for men ages 70 and older because the risks such as infection outweigh the potential benefits. It's a safe bet I won't get bested again, he said. Surfeit screenings and costs. Screenings have become a big business worth tens of billions of dollars, with most of the spending in the mainstream healthcare system. For example, in 2010, consumers and health insurance companies spent an estimated $7.8 billion on mammograms alone, according to a 2014 analysis published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. Little information is available on how many dollars are spent nationwide for screening that's not beneficial. But in a recent study of health insurance claims from 2.4 million people in Washington State, the Washington Health Alliance found that from July 2015 to June 2016, about 26% had at least one test or treatment identified by experts as unnecessary. That cost consumers and their insurers an estimated $282 million for the year. Most of the overuse was due to 11 services, 8 of them screening tests. About $40 million alone went for the annual electrocardiograms, ERGs, and other heart screenings for people at low risk for cardiovascular disease and without symptoms. But when screenings are done in accordance with recommendations from major medical organizations, they can reduce harm and health care costs, says Dade, by decreasing the need for expensive treatment for advanced disease. Early detection and treatment of cancer, heart disease, and diabetes, which account for 7 to 10 deaths and 75% of health care spending in the U.S., can help more people survive and pair cost, according to the CDC. Outside the mainstream health care system, however, the value and cost of screenings gets murkier, and consumers are increasingly opting to circumvent their doctors for DTC screenings from not-for-profit companies. Consumers desire a sense of autonomy. They want to take charge of their own health, Santa Maria Lopez, MD, PhD, MACP, president of the American College of Physicians, ACP. But more importantly, it's become hard to access health care many places. People may not have a regular physician they can talk to about their concerns. Right now, direct-to-consumer screenings represent a small but rapidly expanding part of the market. Consumers in the U.S. spent $15 million on DTC lab and genetic tests in 2010, a figure projected to climb to $350 million by 2020, according to the market research firm Calorama. And these are almost entirely out-of-pocket dollars. DTC's tests usually aren't covered by insurance. Here's a sampling. Mobile screenings. Using portable equipment, companies as AngioScreen, Lifeline Screening, and Matrix Medical Network offer screenings like EKGs or carotid artery scans at community centers, churches, hospitals, and workplaces. Lifeline, the dominant player, markets bundles of tests through ads, flyers, and email, and says it screens almost 1 billion people per year at its 16,000 events. Online and walk-in labs. Companies such as Walk-In Lab, Private MD Labs, and Direct Labs perform blood, urine, and other lab tests of your choice without your doctor's input. In some states, a doctor's authorization is required. Walk-In Labs invite you to take charge of your health and your wallet by ordering anything from a $28 blood type test to an $800 anti-aging panel online. High-end screening clinics. Companies such as Princeton's Longevity Center, which builds itself as the future of preventive medicine, market comprehensive screening options. The executive health exam from Elytra Health in New York City costs $4,900 and includes a CT coronary scan and a cardiac stress test. Additional services, cardioid and abdominal ultrasounds, and full-body CT scans. At-home or in-store health tests. For these genetic tests, such as 199 Ancestry and Health Screening from 23andMe, you submit a vial of saliva and receive a report outlining your risk of illness, like late-onset Alzheimer's and certain cancers. Simpler tests, such as cholesterol and blood sugar checks, at drugstore clinics and health fairs may make it easier to track key health markers, but other DTC offerings may lead to overscreening. For example, the American Academy of Family Physicians, AAFP, advises against the carotid artery scans on many mobile screening menus. For healthy people, they can yield misleading results that can lead to riskier follow-up tests. The American College of Preventive Medicine cautions against full-body CT scans because they're costly, expose people to a lot of radiation, and often result in false positives. It's often cheaper to buy a package of many tests, which incentivizes people to get more tests than they need, says Eric Wallace, MD, Associate Dean of the Colorado Springs branch of the University of Colorado School of Medicine. Those who represent DTC testing companies say their services are valuable. Eric Colquier, the Chief Operation Officer of Elytra Health, says the firm offers efficiency, multiple screenings in one day, and the chance for consumers to have more tests than they would through their own doctors. People are not getting the comprehensive testing they want, he says. He says Elytra's staff discusses overscreening and false positives with clients. They are capable of weighing risk and possible benefits for them, he notes. We have had cases of false positives, absolutely, and cases of real positives. That winds up proving the benefit of a test. Lifeline Screening did not respond to our request for a comment. How to test wisely. When recommending screenings, your doctor should generally rely on scientific evidence and guidelines from the government and expert organizations. But studies have found that many doctors aren't up to date on guidelines, says Lopez of the ACP. For instance, a recent review of 25 studies in the Journal of Preventive Medicine found that up to 45% of cervical cancer screenings failed to follow the USPCF guidelines that were updated in 2012. And Lopez notes that it could be simpler for a harried doctor to agree to a patient's request for a test than to discuss the pros and cons. But guidelines aren't everything. Maybe a patient is at higher risk and should be screened sooner, says Lopez. That's why, after talking to her doctor about her family history, Lynn Milleron opted to be screened for colon cancer at a younger age than is typically recommended. In addition to her father, an aunt died of disease at age 52. Choose a doctor who will discuss all the factors with you, guidelines, your medical and family history, the pros and cons of various screenings, and where the results might lead. You'll be able to make smart decisions if you go into those talks informed about the options. Our guide to 18 common screenings is a good point to start. We're going to start that in a moment. What to know about these 18 screenings, and we probably won't get through all these today, but we'll try to get through as many as we can. We combed through the research and talked with medical experts from leading academic centers, government agencies, and national organizations, such as U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, which is USPSTF, and assessed the evidence on the benefits and risk of these tests. We skipped a few, such as blood pressure, but it's wise to have those measured every time you see a healthcare provider, or more often if you're at higher risk for hypertension. Check with your health insurer to make sure that the screenings your doctor advises are covered. Many are, notably those recommended by the USPSTF, but also be aware that you might be charged extra fees at some testing facilities. And note that if the screening finds something suspicious, any subsequent procedure or diagnostic test may result in extra costs for you, so ask about that too. The list. Abdominal aortic aneurysm screening. This one-time ultrasound looks for a bulge in aorta, the body's largest artery. Why it's done? AAAs have the potential to burst, which can cause life-threatening bleeding. Recommended for men 65 to 75 who are current or former smokers. Non-smoking men and women ages 65 to 75, whoever smoked, might consider if they have risk factors such as a close family member who had an AAA. USPTF recommends against screening non-smoking women ages 65 to 75 whose risk is very low. Possible outcomes: if a small AAA is found less than 2 inches in diameter, your doctor will monitor it closely. AAAs that are larger or growing quickly may need surgical repair. Blood chemistry screening. A complete blood count, a CBC, measures components of your blood, such as red and white blood cells. A metabolic panel checks levels of substances such as enzymes, electrolytes, proteins, and blood sugar. Why it's done? To make sure levels are normal. A CBC check for infection or conditions such as anemia. A metabolic panel checks the functioning of organs such as kidneys and liver. It's recommended for. The use of SPTCF recommends neither for or against the routine use of these healthy people. They may be used for people with blood clotting conditions, for those with chronic illnesses such as diabetes, kidney, or liver disease, to check for drug side effects, or before major surgery. Possible outcomes. If levels are off, your doctor may suggest changes in the management of a chronic illness or medication, or further testing to find the cause of the unexplained symptoms. Screening without a clear cause, often done during routine physicals, may pick up harmless fluctuations that lead to unneeded follow-up testing. Bone density screening. This is a low-dose X-ray called a DEXA scan, measures bone density in your hips and spine. Why it's done? To screen for osteopenia, low bone density, and osteoporosis, weak brittle bones. Recommended for most women at age 65, but earlier around menopause for women with osteoporosis risks such as a family history or smoking, the USPTS says. For men, consider screening at about 80 or sooner if at higher risk for fractures due to factors such as smoking and long-term steroid use. Possible outcomes. For osteopenia, exercise and a diet such as rich in vitamin D and calcium is generally advised. Rescreen in 3 to 5 years. If the scan detects osteoporosis, you may need medication to prevent fractures, and rescreening in 2 years. If results are normal, repeat the test in 10 years. Carotid artery screening. This is an ultrasound of the artery on each side of your neck. Why it's done? Artery narrowing can lead to a higher stroke risk. Recommended for anyone with symptoms of a stroke or a mini-stroke. People without symptoms can skip this. Possible outcomes. If a scan suggests a blocked carotid artery, you could get follow-up tests such as MRI to confirm. Treatment can entail medication or surgery to clear out the artery. Severely narrowed carotid arteries are found in only about 1% of adults, and even then rarely lead to a stroke unless there are other risk factors such as high blood pressure. For people without symptoms, screening can lead to false positives, and studies show that it actually winds up hurting more people than it helps, says Alex Christ, M.D., vice chairperson of the USPSTF. Cholesterol screening. This blood test measures total cholesterol levels, including LDA, bad, and cholesterol, and HDL, good cholesterol, and triglycerides, artery-clogging fatty acids. Why it's done? Unhealthy levels, particularly total cholesterol above 240 mg DL and LDL above 90 mg DL, increase heart disease and stroke risks. Recommended for adults age 40 to 75 with one or more cardiovascular disease risk factors, such as smoking, high blood pressure, and diabetes, should be tested every 5 years and more often if results are outside the healthy range, according to USPTCF. It's a good idea for people younger than 40 with heart disease risk factors or a family history of very high cholesterol to get screened at least once, says Pamela Douglas, M.D., a professor of research in cardiovascular disease at Duke University. Those older than 75 should talk with a doctor about whether screening makes sense based on their overall health. Possible outcomes. Test results along with other heart risk factors may help your doctor determine whether you may benefit from medication. Correct colorectal cancer screening. Your health care provider may prescribe a take-home kit. You send a stool smear to the check for a hidden blood or DNA markers for cancer. But the gold standard is a colonoscopy, an outpatient procedure that typically involves a sedative. A gastroenterologist uses a tube with a small camera attached to examine the inside of your colon. Sigmoidoscopy, which examines only the lower third of the colon, and CT colonoscopy, which uses multiple X-rays to image the colon, are used less often. Why it's done? To detect colon polyps, which can become cancerous. Recommended for generally starting at age 50, although American Cancer Society, citing an increase in colorectal cancer in younger people, recently recommended a first screening at age 45. If you are worried about colorectal cancer or if you are at a higher risk because you have family members diagnosed in their 40s and 50s, that may tip your decision in favor of screening before 50, says Otis Brawley, M.D., the former chief medical and scientific officer of the ACS. That group's recommendations include screening every 10 years with colonoscopy, every 5 years, or sigmoidoscopy, or every 1 or 3 years, with stool tests depending on the type. People ages 76 to 85 should talk to their daughter about whether screening makes sense. At 80, colonoscopy risks such as colon tears and anesthesia complications rise. Suspicious findings on possible outcomes. Suspicion findings on any of the less invasive screenings, including simioscopy, will usually mean you'll be advised to have a colonoscopy. Electrocardiogram, EKG, and exercise stress tests. With an EKG, electrodes attached to your chest measure your heart's electrical activity. In an exercise stress test, you have an EKG while on a treadmill or stationary bike, and after taking medication to make your heart beat harder and faster. Why it's done? To check for signs of heart disease or arrhythmias, recommended for those at high risk of heart disease or those with suspected heart disease or symptoms such as chest pain or shortness of breath, as a diagnostic tool. For others, major medical groups don't recommend the test, which doctors sometimes do during routine physicals. Possible outcomes. For people with heart disease or symptoms, these tests may help determine the risk of a cardiac event. In low-risk people with no symptoms, they can lead to inaccurate results in unnecessary procedures, such as angiography or a heart x-ray or angioplasty, treatment to an open an artery. Hepatitis C screening, a blood test that checks for this viral infection. Hepatitis C can linger in the body symptomless for years. Half of the people with it are unaware. Early detection and treatment prevents complications such as liver damage, cancer, and even death. Recommended for anyone who has born between 1945 and 1965, had a blood transfusion before 1992, or used IV recreational drugs. Possible outcomes. If you test positive, another blood test, hepatitis C virus RNA, is needed to confirm the diagnosis. The virus clears up on its own in about 15 to 25% of cases. For those who need it, antiviral medication cures the disease more than 90% of the time. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's broadcast of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. We would like to thank all of our past sponsors for their generous contributions to the Reading Service. If you have any comments or questions or would like to be a sponsor, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the Triangle Reading Radio Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.